and welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast with me, Damien Wild. What links Basil Brush and urban regeneration? Croydon, of course. London's most heavily populated borough enjoyed a reputation as one of the largest commercial centres outside central London, with an admired retail offer and a thriving nighttime economy. More recently, however, it has become the butt of too many jokes. Too many to these Croydon-born ears, at least. In an article on the refurbishment of the Fairfield Halls last month, The Guardian said what had been a beacon of the London suburb's progressive vision, hosting the Beatles, Stevie Wonder and Kraftwerk, had lost its shine, much like Croydon itself. The paper continued to sniff. By the 1990s, as the town's modernist luster faded to stained concrete, the billing was mostly occupied by slot-filling tribute bands of tribute bands and pantomimes featuring Basil Brush. Now, as someone who as a child once saw Basil Brush on stage at the Fairfield Halls, I took issue with this. I tweeted how I wouldn't have him used as a benchmark for urban decay. Now, I wouldn't say there was a flood of support, but there was some. The Croydon chapter of the Basil Brush fan club is clearly a small one. But the Fairfield Halls refurbishment is just the tip of the iceberg. Croydon was the choice of Box Park for its second London outlet. The government has opened a hub at Stanhope and Schroeder's Ruskin Square. And the world's largest prefab tower is being built by Tide Construction in Croydon. One day we may even see Westfield and Hammerson's investment in the Whitgift Centre bear fruit. At this week's MIPIM UK, I caught up with Croydon Council Chief Executive Joe Negrini. There was a lot to discuss about the future of Croydon. So, Joe, welcome to MIPIM. You've been here all day. Have you had a good day? What have you been talking about?
Thank you, Damien. I'm having a great day today. I have been on a really good panel with talking about knowledge clusters, whatever that means. But it was.
What does it mean? All the tough questions are going to come out today.
No, it was about. Well, from my point of view, it was about how you kind of look at education, digital, and creativity and innovation as key drivers for really improving places. So I was talking about the experience in Croydon of the work that we've been doing, well, the historical work that really was a big platform for the original improvements to Croydon around Croydon Tech City. You may have remembered there were this kind of maverick movement of digital people in Croydon, a voluntary organisation that operated in Croydon between about 2012 and 2018. And they basically sought to bring all of the people working in digital and any forms of innovation together as part of a really big network. And they promoted themselves, you know, it was at around the time of Silicon Valley when the original Tech City in Old Street was all happening. And they were kind of, they set themselves up to be a challenge to this notion that these things only can happen in the central activity zone, and things were happening all over London, and as they do happened all over, and we know that to be true around these kind of networks of people operating in places like Hackney, but they're now also happening in outer London and have been happening in outer London. So we were very much talking about the role that that plays in promoting a place and actually changing people's view about a place. And I think the work that they did and the work that my team, through my fantastic Chief Digital Officer, Neil Williams, who's really driving both the improvements to our digital platform as a council, but also really taking up where Croydon Tech City left off, about really kind of making sure that we create this fantastic platform for digital that particularly local residents can benefit from. So it's just part of the ingredients that we've pulled together. So I talked a bit about that.
And another ingredient to a knowledge cluster is very often a university. And I remember chairing something in Croydon a few years ago now where I hadn't realised quite how many students live in Croydon. Mm. There's no university, they travel to other universities. But is that still an ambition?
Yeah, I mean, at MIPIM in March, we launched a new partnership with London South Bank University. Because as you know, Damien, you know, over the last, you know, 5 years in Croydon, we've had kind of some key strands to the way that we've looked at Croydon in terms of how we would improve it. And, you know, obviously, you know, housing, commercial space, culture, Fairfield Halls has just reopened, as you know, in the last couple of weeks. But we were missing that main you know, that main ingredient, that very important ingredient, which was higher education. It was crazy that you've got a place the size of Croydon with 400,000 people where something like 25% of the population's under 18, but you don't have any higher education provision. So we went out to seek partners and we set up a kind of a process where we went out and started talking to different types of universities. And actually we spoke with London South Bank University for a number of reasons. One, because it's a South London university, which we wanted to support, because if you actually look at where all the key, you know, higher education institutions are in London, they're East London, they're West London, they're Central London. But for us, you know, with the exception of places like Kingston University and other universities, South Bank's our big partner. University of the Arts has obviously gone to East London. So for us, South Bank was a really good choice because their whole priority is about making higher education accessible for people. And they've got one of the largest programs of apprenticeships of any of the universities. And for a place like Croydon, where we want a university presence, not for its, you know, for particularly for its undergraduate or postgraduate, what we do want universities is to provide an offer that's really relevant to people that live in Croydon. And with a number of young people, we really wanted a university that really had that at the centre of what they do. So we've been working with them since March, and we're looking to have first courses on the ground next September. So we're working on premises. But that's a really important part of that, you know, connection between the knowledge piece, the digital piece, the innovation piece, and the creativity and cultural piece, I think, for Croydon, to have all of those things joining up. The important thing for us has always been in Croydon to create a place that people really want to be in. And you've got to have all of those different elements. But particularly, I think, along with other parts of London, not just us, we want to make sure that it's completely relevant to people that live in Croydon and they feel proud of what we're doing.
So knowledge, digital, yeah. Culture. You said Fairfield Halls has just reopened. I'm looking forward to going there.
Banksy, of course. Banksy a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Still, when does it close?
This week.
Well, I'll have to try and rush down perhaps on Thursday. Yeah. Another important aspect is retail, of course, and Croydon, its retail offer, much celebrated back in the 60s, you know, perhaps fallen on harder times, but it got that tremendous shot in the arm when a Westfield was promised. We're still waiting to see what's going to emerge there. How are plans going?
It's a very challenging environment to do a large retail scheme.
That's an understatement.
It's a very challenging environment to do development per se, I think. You know, you hear around MIPIM here, but also within the development community generally, that everything is really slowing down, and you can feel that. The number of applications and people who are, you know, coming through our doors now is less than it was 12 months ago. And everybody's just waiting to see what happens. And I think that's, you know, we're unfortunately in a situation where we've got a £1.5 billion investment, where obviously Unibail Rodamco and Hammerson are keen to kind of see what happens in terms of Brexit and the impact of all of that. But also, you know, the change, yeah, we're in a scenario where retail is really changing. So what we're expecting from Westfield, Unibail Rodamco, Hammerson, is I would probably suggest a smaller retail footprint, but more mixed use development on that site, and they're you know talking to our planners at the moment in terms of looking at how they can make, you know, I think they publicly said that they were reviewing the scheme, which they're doing. The good news about them reviewing the scheme is not about whether they're going to do it or not. The question is what it should look like, and I think that's where we're at the moment.
And mixed use, does that means more leisure, presumably, residential?
Yeah. The original scheme had, you know, 2,000 homes and, you know, a large amount of retail. But, you know, a lot of, if you look at what's happened at Stratford, you know, the model is very much, you know, there's large F&B offer, cinema offer, and much more entertainment kind of offer as part of the mix. And I think, you know, if you look at what's happening with retail generally, you know, retail is moving much more to experiences for people. And I think the model that they've got at Stratford is very much, you know, you go there for the experience of the day. You go there, you eat, you drink, you go to the cinema and you do some shopping as an ancillary thing. And I think a lot of people go to Stratford for their F&B and leisure offer, as opposed to going there to spend money in the shops, although it's always busy when I go there. But I think that's where it's kind of heading.
So we should expect something more experiential in Croydon?
Yeah.
Okay, and the other big topic at MIPIM, at every MIPIM, at this MIPIM UK particularly, has been housing.
Yeah.
And the need to deliver and close that 300,000 home gap, and how different parts of the country can contribute. I just wonder, as a you know, something of a pioneer through with local authority housing companies, many, many more are at it these days, is it getting harder or easier in this environment to deliver homes?
I think it is hard. I mean, for local authorities, you know, and as you said, there are a lot of local authorities now up and down the country, particularly in London, who have their own development companies. Obviously, we've had Brick by Brick since around 2015-16, when we set it up. And the kind of model that a lot of local authorities have historically used has been about, you know, where the 100% shareholder, our model is it's 100%, the council is 100% shareholder. We effectively borrow money, and Brick by Brick borrows from us, and on the basis of that capital and equity, they can develop homes that we want and we need, which range in different types of tenure, from social rent right through to private, to kind of pay for the whole model, if you like. So there's always an element of private housing as part of that. But that's the thing that we use to provide us with the ability to deliver the quantum of affordable housing, proper affordable social rent homes that we need. Obviously, there was a big announcement over the last week about increasing Public Works Loans Board, which is the place where we, most local authorities normally go to borrow
their money. It was a full percentage point overnight, wasn't it? That seems unusual.
Yeah, it was a full percentage, which you know, when councils are generally borrowing from that, that's their main form of borrowing. You know, that's a significant hit. It's effective from everything new from now on. So everything that we've had in the pipeline, or money that we've borrowed historically from Public Works Loan Board, that's secure at the and that interest rate was fixed at the time. But anything new that we borrow, which will make it more challenging for us to make things stack up. I mean, the other issue for places like Croydon is the values are really different from central London. You know, when you look at our kind of colleagues who are operating in development in central London, because of the land values, it's a lot easier to make things stack up financially, and you know, things are a lot more viable, and it's not easy to deliver affordable housing in central London. But you know, if you look at developing a number of sites at once and think about a program of development in the way that we've had to in Croydon, it's very challenging anyway because of land value issues to make things stack up, and the extra percentage point will have an impact on what we can and can't do, or what the next program needs to look like. You know, we need to be able to generate the money that to be able to deliver the affordable housing. So you'll probably see on the horizon probably more private units delivered by councils to help them pay for the extra percentage point they're not getting through their borrowing rates.
Interesting. Are the private markets an option as well? Does it make you more likely?
Yes. And we, you know, most councils do borrow from a range of different places, private markets as well as public works. So there's other options. You know, who knows what's going to happen with general Bank of England interest rates, and what's going to happen with borrowing generally over the next couple of months. It'll be interesting to see what happens whenever we get a conclusion to Brexit.
Whenever that might be. Okay, Joe, it's your birthday today, so happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
40 again.
Well, congratulations. And thank you for coming on the podcast on your 40th birthday.
Always a pleasure, Damien.
Have a good evening.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
So on Croydon, watch this space. That's it for this week. See you next time.